It's just that you've got to be careful these days.
Yeah, I know, I know.
Do you? I thought I knew too. Until one night I was checking out this discotheque. The one in the bowling alley on 15 Mile. I met this girl, she seemed really nice. We danced a bit, I kissed her, one thing led to another, and now I get sores on my lip once a month. I have herpes. Doesn't hurt that much, but believe me, you don't want it.
Can I please go now?
I just blew your mind, didn't I?
TBTL.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's Friday. Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend.
We'll walk that fine line between cutting edge irreverence and trouble with the Federal Communications Commission.
We're getting medium play on three independent radio stations in Central Europe.
We was hoping for some razzle dazzle.
Razzle dazzle.
That's right, man. Razzle dazzle.
Hey, sister, Miss Cochran here. Baby, up your butt with a coconut. I think he was prepared to do it. Except I saw no coconut. He had no coconut to bite out of.
Okay, everybody. Hello, good morning, and welcome to a Friday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Ziggle zag it. Let's get back at it.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
You want showmanship? You got it.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Another beautiful morning here. It's looking like sunshine today. Tomorrow, cloudy. Sunday, rainy. Hopefully that forecast will hold because, of course, tomorrow is the TBTL summer picnic. Maybe we shouldn't have the summer picnic at the very end of summer because it means if the weather forecast shifts even a little bit, we may have a slightly soggy picnic tomorrow. But we will be there. Rain or shine, and we hope to see you there as well. Also, we hope that you will enjoy this episode 2983 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
We have a lot to talk about, actually, on this Friday, including the intense secrecy around Margaret Atwood's latest book. It's the sequel to The Handmaid's Tale, and the lengths that local booksellers and independent booksellers have had to go to try to keep the secrecy around the book. Well, it kind of makes sense because it's a highly anticipated tome. The problem is Amazon.com accidentally sent out a bunch of copies, which is really grinding the gears of a lot of booksellers. And that honestly kind of makes sense. Also, the isolated vocal tracks of Marvin Gaye's Heard It Through the Grapevine have been released.
Your voice is like a combination of Fergie and Jesus.
And unlike a lot of the other times where the isolated vocal tracks get released, including, well, Smash Mouth and David Lee Roth come to mind, this release reflects very well on the singer in question, Mr. Marvin Gaye, so we'll play those for you. And I'll tell you what, I don't think I've ever listened all the way through to the isolated vocal tracks of Running with the Devil, David Lee Roth's vocals. We play them a lot on the show. We play a little clip, though, just like a quick clip. I listen to the whole thing, and it is truly madness at some parts of the song. I'm not saying the singing's not even good. I'm saying it's madness. So we'll talk about that, too. Oh, and then we'll talk to this guy. He's the Walsh of Wall Street. Speaking of things that are kept secret, he's got a few.
I got a lot of secrets. I prefer to keep clandestine. Terrible, disturbing secrets.
Hopefully he'll be able to keep it all under his hat tomorrow. Although you will be wearing a hat, right, at the picnic. His name's Andrew Walsh. He joins me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Are you wearing a cap tomorrow?
I figure I will wear a cap tomorrow. The question is, yeah, which... I can't believe I'm at this stage in my life. I feel like such a dork. I used to just be a one-cap kind of guy, right? I had, sure, a baseball cap. I'd wear it into the ground, and then I'd get a new one, and then I'd wear it into the ground. And now I've got, like, yeah, several, which I don't, mm-hmm, know if that's really a great look for a 41-year-old
guy. Catman's world.
Catman's world.
Hey, I'm taking Just, I'm 42. This is like the second time this week I referred to myself as a 41-year-old. I'm trying to buy some extra time here. But anyway, the question is, if I'm going to be manning a grill tomorrow... Oh, by the way, several suggestions on Slack from people saying that we should call tomorrow's picnic Hot Grill Summer.
Mmm.
How do you feel about that?
I like it.
In matter of fact, yeah.
Yes.
That's the...
I can't believe I missed that one. I literally have... Sorry, I know you want to talk about...
Nope, go ahead.
...caps, but... I've been doing a lot of. I am 43, and I know it, and it is. I feel it intensely when I'm. I had to Google what Hot Girl Summer actually was, like how that got started. I also had to Google the other day a Visco Girl. I'm just so out of touch with the things that I will see percolating on the internet. I'm just spending so much time trying to know my meme.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that either. I mean, I just don't know how I feel about baseball caps, my wearing of them or not wearing them, or how I feel about this whole aging thing, because I'm with you, too. I mean, I feel like I can smell bullshit when it arises in pop culture still, because the Hot Girl Summer thing that seemed like, from my understanding of it, it was organic enough with, that was like with Lizzo, right, and Megan Thee Stallion.
No, it was actually, it was Megan Thee Stallion.
Wasn't it her and Lizzo playing together, though, or did that come later? Anyway.
She has a song called Hot Girl Summer.
Okay.
And then Lizzo playing the flute on the porch was just when those two worlds collided, but
gotcha.
Hot Girl Summer was directly from a song that she did. I'm only quoting this with such, or saying this with such confidence, because I recently Googled it, which is so
you
sad.
Know your meme. No. Well, that's good. What I noticed, though, then is, like, I don't know how I've ended up doing this. I used to never do this, but I've been going to, like, the search page on my Twitter, on my phone, and so that shows you what's trending in a pretty kind of aggressive way. And I saw the other day one of the trending headlines was, Hot Girl Summer's almost over, but get ready, because Hot Girl Semester is right around the corner. And I was like, that's not a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that, I can tell you for sure that that is you just trying to get some extra miles out of Hot Girl Summer. But maybe I'm wrong about that. Because, again, like you, I've lost complete touch with what's going on. And sometimes I think, that's freeing. That's good. And then other times I think, yeah, but I open up my mouth and I talk for 10 hours a week. And that's just on this podcast. I should probably be responsible for knowing a modicum of what's happening in pop culture, too. So I don't know what hat I'm going to wear tomorrow is my point.
I wonder sometimes if we both, like, is this a one hat per crew rule? Like, usually if we're doing a video or something, if one of us has a baseball hat, then I try not to. When I say one of us, I mean you, because it's like, that's, you're generally in a baseball cap, and I wonder, is it redundant if I wear one, or should we go the other way, and should we wear matching, almost matching Rainier's hats tomorrow?
Where are you, like, on fedoras? Where are you? Fedora I'm talking about.
I have a
fedora.
Modesto Nuts fedora.
Oh, good. I'll
Modesto
wear my...
Nuts to you, McGillicuddy.
I'll wear my Higantes hat then.
Should we do it like we're a team? Like, this is Team TBTL, and we're actually going to, instead of going away from looking similar, we should go towards it. And, like, because we both have Rainier's hats that we love, we could both be wearing those. Would that be weird?
Well, I mean, I don't think it would be weird if it just happened. I think it's becoming weird because we're talking about it.
No, opposite. I feel the opposite. I feel the opposite. When you make it into a thing, like if we discuss that we're going to wear matching hats, then it's a plan. Then when people see us in the matching hats, and they're actually not matching, they're different colors, but they both have the Rainier's logo on there. Then it's like, oh, they did this on purpose. It's, to me, it would be far sadder if we just showed up wearing the same clothes and we hadn't coordinated it.
Really? You and I, our looks are not at all similar. So, if we happen to both be wearing baseball caps, and also baseball caps are just a very common thing. Like, if you and I were, I worry about it more with Sean DeTore, because he always wore that green, let's call it a Castro hat for years and years. Yeah. And then I got into the green Castro hat game. And then
Viva
he,
la
and I,
Lucion.
He and I would show up at events. And I mean, I like my green cap. I'm not going to stop wearing it. But I definitely, if Sean and I both show up in the same green army cap, then I will take mine off, because you bow to the master, obviously. And I do think that that is like a very specific look that two people shouldn't be wearing on stage necessarily. At a picnic in the summertime, and it's technically still summertime, even if it's the 7th of September.
No, it's still Hot Girl Summer.
That's
Everybody
right.
knows that.
And that's hot grill semester's right around the corner. I just think like two guys wearing baseball caps, I don't think anybody would even notice except for.
Right, but this, see, but this goes to, I think, a difference. Again, I've been doing this a lot lately and I've been wrong most of the time. But this, I think, goes to a difference in how you and I want to be perceived in the world, or at least in how much effort we want people to know we're putting into how we're perceived. I am clearly very in my head about things like not wearing a hat that has writing on it while wearing a T-shirt that has writing on it.
Oh, right.
Too many messages. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of it is when your kind of discomfort with us coordinating it is because I don't think you want people to think, or maybe you don't just put that much time into thinking about your clothing other than, is it clean? Is it wrinkle-free, and is it in my closet right now?
And does my belly poke out? That's the number one thing.
Right. Honestly. And I'm constantly like, is this – what message am I sending with this particular getup? And that's just a way more inside one's head about one's clothing way to be, which is how I tend to be.
Yeah, and I go back and forth. I have other friends, or I'm thinking of one guy in particular who's also like thinking about the way he looks, and I admire that because he's a good looking guy. He's a thin guy. He's got great fashion sense, and every photo I've ever seen him in, he looks like a handsome, fashionable man.
Do I know this person?
It's Durs. It's not Durs, although he's also a handsome, fashionable man. I'm talking about Hannah Brooks Olsen's partner, Keith. Is who I'm talking about. Okay. I don't know if you
know
him. You might have met him once or twice. But he comes up a lot on the show because when like Hannah and I are talking in our podcast about cleaning, about the way we do clothes and stuff, he's a very meticulous person. The way he hangs his sweatpants to dry because he's concerned about his sweatpants making sure that they maintain like their structure.
You don't
and
do
stuff.
That?
No, I don't have sweatpants. I have a pair of like oversized, like literally four times too big for me, work pants, like grandpa work pants kind
are
of
they
that were
Jankos?
Probably khakis at one time. No, I think they're just like, I don't know, like Macy's brand or something, but probably from 1994. And they're really loose and soft. And I just cinch those up with a belt. And those are my equivalent of you know, sweatpants. Those are my tonight pants. So anyway, point is, when I look at the way people like you and Keith navigate the world, part of me is kind of like, well, that must be nice to have just have a tiny bit of self-respect and think about the way you present yourself to the world. Like, that is probably something that I should maybe shoot for a little bit more. But the flip side of it is, it sounds exhausting. And there are other times where I'm kind of like, God, I'm glad of all of the things that I have to worry about, I will never worry about if I'm the second person wearing a Rainier's hat at a bar or event, you know?
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I mean, you look like shit, but you feel good. And
that's right. It's hot Andrew summer.
I'm going to bring.
It's slob girl summer over here.
Okay, that's the show title. Dang, the Walsh of Wall Street has done it again. Slob girl summer. Actually, that sounds.
Yeah, I don't want to use it as a show title because it'll sound like we're
something else.
Yeah, like we're being mean towards women or something, which is not
right.
What
right.
We're doing here.
No, but what I will do, Andrew, is I'll bring five hat options.
So I want you to do costume changes, man. Wardrobe changes, I should say.
It's all
going to
be Everlane. That's the thing. It'll just be like, which Everlane shirt is he wearing with his Rainier's hat? So,
right.
Okay, we need to take a break, but I wanted to tell you something really quickly, which is I have found your – it's not really your twin, but I have identified a person in the world who is – bears more similarity to you in how you move through the world than anyone I've ever encountered. I was texting with Veeves about this, actually. He's the comedian and writer Josh Gondelman. I'm not just saying this to plug Livewire tonight, although I will mention that that is happening at the Neptune Theater, and Josh is one of the guests. I just finished reading his book called Nice Try. It's very funny, but I've never read somebody describe their way of being in the world more similarly to yours. Like, he has a whole chapter about how he basically decided when he lived in New York after some amount of time that he was going to stop apologizing when people bumped into him. And when he tries to do it and it's very hard, and then he finally has like the biggest polite car moment. You know, like where he finally he has it out with someone and he has a whole thing in his mind that he's going to say, but he says something different because he's a bit flustered. But he did he expressed himself, which felt good. And how his sense of he's very frustrated at times because he is obeying the rules. Mm-hmm. And then when other people are not obeying the rules, it's frustrating, right? I mean, understandably frustrating for him. I feel like, I don't know if, like, what is the policy on recommending a book to someone when you want to say to the person, I think this book is also about you?
I guess, like, I don't know
if that would be soothing for you to read it and to be like, oh, me and this guy Josh are so similar. Or if you'd find parts of it that you're like, well, that's not me. Is that how Luke perceives me? Because I don't want you to take any of it the wrong way. I'm just, my mind is blown. There's a bunch of other parts where I just have circled. I just wrote Andrew. Like, this is so similar to you. And by the way,
do you want me there? Do you want me to be like off stage or something, like kind of advising you, whispering in your ear so that you can kind of like, so I can help you navigate Andrew Waters?
I've spent like 2,500 episodes of this show.
Yeah, and, prepping.
And one international trip just marinating in kind of how you are. And by the way, all of this in my mind is a positive. Like, part of, I think, why you and I have been able to do this show for so long together, unless you're holding in a lot, which is possible, is because you are actually a very kind, very thoughtful person, a good traveling companion. Like, I'm a big fan of yours. So when I say I'm reading a book of a person who is you, I'm also a big fan of this Josh Gondelman's now. So, like, this is all a positive, but it's just the similarities are so striking.
I know you already said this, but can you remind me? So is he mostly an author, or is he a comedian who has now written a book? Like, does he do stand-up?
He's a stand-up. He used to write for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and now he is a writer and producer on Desus and Marrow.
Oh, Desus.
But he also... Would I say it wrong? Desus?
Yeah, I think it's Desus and Marrow, though I might be mispronouncing it too. But...
No, you're saying it right. I feel like it's so close to Jesus that I have Desus, that I always get that part wrong. But yeah, he works for that show now.
I'm very interested in watching his stand-up. I like the way you're like, you should read his book. I'm like, well, do we have anything that involves less reading and more watching of TV? I'm looking at photos of him now. It looks like he's kind of like me as far... Well, no, he puts more thought into his fashion than I do. Never mind.
Well, you're probably looking at book publicity photos.
Yeah.
So he's probably... That's probably him operating at full fashion. I mean,
right,
I can do an inquiry tonight, and I can get some photos, and then later you and I can run through them and decide which one of you puts more thought into fashion.
Do you know which hat he's going to be wearing to the picnic tomorrow?
Yeah, the San Jose Quakes.
Quakes.
Yes, that is right.
I was thinking that when I... Oh, you didn't watch that. We should go to a break. But you didn't end up watching the rerun of that
Texas League game yesterday.
Yeah.
I actually got busy doing LiveWire stuff.
No, that makes a lot more sense than watching a rerun of a AA minor league game. But
I thought about it. I mean, I really considered it because you the way you described it, it made me very interested. Yep. All right, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll tell you about this Margaret Atwood book debacle. And I don't know if this is interesting content, but I got on a text chain last night. I mean, I didn't land on this text chain. This text chain landed on me, but I kind of want to read it to you. Let's just say, if there's opposite Gondelman world, if there's opposite Walsh Gondelman world, it's this text chain about Dykstra's makeshift man cave called the Post Office, which is built and dedicated to the music of the singer Post Malone. I'll mention Dykstra is, I believe, 42.
I would like to lead with that because you...
Okay, well, we'll do that
interest.
Then we come back from the break. Okay, back in a moment. This is TVTL.
You are better now, better now. You only say that cause I'm not around, not around. You know I never meant to let you down, let you down. Would've gave you anything, would've gave you everything. You know I...
Do you recognize this?
I don't think so. We might. This is Post Malone. I know that because I'm playing it from my end. And you said that this song... Do you think that this is a song that gets a little bit more attention, or is this just in your world and amongst your friends, this is the song that you guys are rocking to in the Post Office?
I feel like I just hear it floating through the background of my life a lot of the Post Malone songs, but maybe it's just one I kind of latched onto. Yeah, it's like... you know, there's Post Malone is obviously super popular on the radio, and I've read reviews of, I mean, he is a target of, you know, the pitchfork writers of the world. He's not one of those popular artists that the music sort of like cognoscenti has deemed likable. It's like people think that he's not good and that he sort of appropriates other musical styles. And all of that might be true. But I will tell you what, if I'm sitting somewhere, if I'm sitting in a bar somewhere and Post Malone comes on, I am not mad at it.
Yeah, this seems totally fine to me.
It's kind of listenable, right?
Yeah, but again, I lack, and this is what we were talking about before, I really, aside, you are offering all of the cultural context I have around Post Malone, and no offense, but chances are there's probably, I should probably expand that context a little bit. You know, like, I have no idea, but I only judged him by how he looked, and you're never supposed to judge a post office by its cover. And I always just assumed it was just going to be a terrible, terrible sound, but on a couple occasions that we play it, I'm like, oh, yeah, this isn't terrible at all.
Yeah, he's got this look that's just very generationally different than, like, our vibe. You know, he's got these face tattoos, and he's a white guy who has... some kind of grill going on. He knows about hot grill summer.
Yeah.
And I will also mention, though, not that I want to turn this into like a, I don't know, in defense of Post Malone, but I can't remember the show that I saw him on, but I saw him interviewed, or maybe I listened to him being interviewed, and he was very likable and self-aware in this 5 minutes I was watching. And what I remember was that and of course this is not helpful without the context, but I felt like the person interviewing him was trying to kind of just like, they were trying to go for one thing. I don't know if it was about his like drug use, which he claims now that he doesn't smoke weed anymore because he had a bad experience. But the person interviewing him, I felt like, was trying to just go with the most obvious tropes about him. And he wasn't like annoyed by it. He just seemed like smiley and happy to be there and actually kind of like not high on his own supply, as it were. That was just the impression I got of 5 minutes of watching him. Okay, so why are we playing Post Malone right now? Well, because my friend and Camaro Kev's friend and Roden's friend, Dykstra, he took, I believe, I haven't even been in this thing, but he took what I've been told I think is some kind of a like outdoor shed type building that you can buy, I assume, at like Home Depot or Lowe's. It's one of those ones that's like outside of the building, but then has like a bike lock cable running through it for some reason. Like, don't steal our shed. Because it's like, you know, they're probably $500. I believe he got the plans to one of them. Anyway, he built this kind of small outbuilding. His house has two floors to it. There's a lot of room in his actual house. But I don't know if it was his wife or what, but he felt compelled to build this other thing and then trick it out with all manner of guy stuff. And it's called the Post Office because he mostly sits out there playing the music of Post Malone. He sent a text out to our text chain last night that's like, Camaro's on it, Roden's on it, a couple other people. This was last night, 10:11 p.m. Just wanted to say, the new Post Malone is fire. And then Camaro Kev, who's in Croatia right now, just disliked, just wanted to say the new Post Malone is fire. Checking in from the island of Split, Croatia, to just dislike it, just throw a hard thumbs down on that. By the way, this is the dynamic of this text chain, is Dykstra talking about his enjoyment of the music of Post Malone and the Post Office, and then mostly Camaro and our friend Race just absolutely just crapping on that idea. And then Race checks in. So again, the original text was, just wanted to say the new Post Malone is fire. And then Race says, just wanted to say the Post Office needs to be on fire. Then Camaro Kev liked, just wanted to say the Post Office needs to be on fire. And then Dykstra's response was just like, Jesus. Then there's a photo of the inside of the Post Office where there is a huge poster of Post Malone. He framed a poster. He built a wood frame for a picture of Post Malone and framed it in the Post Office. Then next to that is a picture of a Dodge Viper, a huge poster of a Dodge Viper that is also, it appears to be framed on a fake stone backdrop, like a kind of stacked stone fireplace, kind of like the one we have in our house a little bit, but I don't think there's real stacked stone in there. I believe it's a wallpaper that makes it look like stacked stone.
I don't understand the aggression, though. Why is everybody...
I don't understand the aggression either.
I love it. I love this. He
it's pretty funny.
He's found what he loves, yeah. and he's pursuing it.
And then he is... Yeah, he's... I mean, honestly, I have to give him credit. The post office does look like kind of a fun place to hang out. But then Camaro comes in with his common response. Anytime there's a photo of the post office posted in this chain, Camaro has one response, and he's consistent in this. He just writes, "Condemn it." That is his response at all times when he sees a picture of the post. "Condemn it." That's all he says. And then Dykstra comes in with, "Bless it." And then he mentions that this other friend of ours, Derek, he goes, "Derek likes it." And then Race says, "He told me," I'm going to use a swear word here. Race says, "He told me he shit in there and you still haven't found it."
Oh.
And then Camaro, checking in from Croatia, "It just always smells that way." And then Dykstra, indefatigable as he is, says, "You guys can't bring me down."
Yeah.
That was it.
Good. Stay yeah. strong.
Yeah, I know.
Can we name the show Who Posters the Post Malones?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's fun. I guess what's funny about it is that those text flurries crack me up so hard because it is like a world of broiness and just negging uh-huh. that I don't live in very much. I'm yeah. mostly reading Josh Gondelman and hanging with you and like prepping for a public radio show. And then sometimes I dip my toe into a world of my guy friends who just take, there's no greater pleasure than just giving each other
yeah.
absolute shit. And there's yeah. something kind of delightful about that too, for some reason.
And there's something delightful about Camaro Kev tossing that shit when Camaro Kev isn't, he is so into so many niche things
oh,
that only he is into and will be the first one to
oh,
make
yeah.
fun of himself about it. Like, how can you spend
oh, totally.
So much time in your post office when you could be watching 3D right. versions of terrible movies?
Or, you know, breaking out old kickboxing
right.
fights involving Rick the Jet Rufus.
Right. Or like, or just poring over your Def Leppard box set, which I got to say,
yeah.
I've held that Def Leppard box set, and it is impressive. What I like about Camaro Kev and other people like him is, like, I was the type of guy who would get a box set, and I would be really excited about all of the extra paraphernalia in there and the book and everything, but then I would never actually read the book.
The pyrophernalia you're talking
right.
about, Def Leppard. Version.
I don't know if you're picking up on a theme here, but you know, like, I would get like the box set or whatever it is, and then I'd be like, oh, I can't wait to just like read this 40-page booklet that details the entire career of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and then I'd be like, ah, I'm just going to listen to it again. I'd never actually read that material. Whereas I do believe that Camaro Kev and other people like him kind of celebrate the entire experience.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, he has at times when it's been late at night and we've been into our cups, he is, I wouldn't say forced, because he's a very jovial sort when he's had a few drinks, but he has strongly encouraged us to watch not one but two separate Def Leppard live concerts on DVD mm-hmm. or on Laserdisc or whatever to compare, because they're like, it's two live events recorded, I don't know, 20 years apart. And it's a compare and contrast of how Def Leppard's holding up. And I have done that. And what I think we need to do is we need to organize a Def Leppard film festival in the post office. We need to bring,
oh, no.
It's going to be like a modern day Camp
work?
David Accord. No. We need to
okay.
finally get everybody in the same room, in the same post office, and just say, you know what? We're more alike than we are different, guys. We all like some weird, dumb stuff.
It'll be. I'm picturing like the DMZ, right? There's like a that,
yes.
maybe. What if
no,
that's what
true.
The little, because there is a little shed at the DMZ, right?
Yeah,
little,
the post office.
Yeah.
You're right. I'm looking at it on Google Earth right now. No, it's actually a shed from the DMZ. That's exactly what it is. Hey, let's thank our Post Malone donors of the day.
I did switch to a little bit of Leppard here. I hope that's okay.
Oh, okay.
Just in the spirit of the conversation.
Yeah. Okay. Let's thank our Rick Allen. A lot of people would say, you lost an arm, you're probably not going to be a high level rock drummer anymore. But Rick Allen said, nope, I am. I'm going to leave the hospital early, which he did. I'm going to go directly to a music store, which he did. And I'm going to start pricing out drum pedals that I can convert wow. into being the way I can play the drums with still now just one arm.
It is impressive. He said, I didn't
really?
Lose an arm. I gained a daughter. And then everybody's like, what are you talking
yep.
about? He's like, I don't know. It just
yep.
sounded right.
Yeah. No, that I heard an interview with Def Leppard on the Howard Stern show. They were so likable and self-aware. This seems like a theme for me today. But they were actually kind of great. And it was an amazing story. Do you know that Rick Allen, the drummer for Def Leppard, who has one arm, he lost his arm in a car crash, that the person behind him was a nurse, thankfully, and she was able to administer first aid to him, and they actually saved his arm. They reattached it, but then it just didn't work, if I remember the story correctly. But she met somebody else. Well, I don't know if it was one of the first responders or one of the other people that was in the traffic backup, and I believe the nurse who helped him ended up marrying the person that she met in the backup to the crash that cost Rick Allen his arm.
Wow.
How's that for a deep to dazzle you?
I'm to consider me dazzled. I wanted a dazzling deaf deet.
Yeah. All right. Let's thank our Def Leppard donors of the day. That is, in fact, a lot of D's. Elizabeth Gerard of Seattle, Washington. Oh, by the way, yesterday we were going around and around with listener Michael's name. Was it Michelle? It's Michael. He checked in and said, thanks a lot, parents, for a lifetime of confusion. So you're right, actually. You were the one that suggested it was just probably Michael. So
but
thanks
spelled
for
correctly, M-I-C-H-E-L.
Correct, yes.
Gotcha, cool.
Ellen Mida of San Jose, California. Do they have a minor league baseball team there?
Let me look it up really quickly. Yes.
Keep doing the names. Okay. You just see if you can find that out. Okay, good. They're the Posty Malones. Mm-hmm. Alex Washington of Brooklyn, New York. Alex, maybe we'll see you at our show at Lilfield on Wednesday, the 2nd of October. That is coming up. Also, Kevin Wilson of Portland, Oregon. Cheryl Axel of Bellevue, Washington. And then Marcus Hum of Seattle, Washington. Marcus, Cheryl, Kevin, Alex, Ellen, and Elizabeth. Thank you so much for supporting TVTL. Thanks for listening, many of you, for all these years. Thanks for donating. I know, because I'm also living in this world, that there are about 50,000 little direct withdrawals that go out of all of our accounts. I just got one for my Apple Music, the New York Times, the Washington Post, you name it. There's all these little $10 here, $10 there for all of our digital access to the world. And sometimes we have to prioritize, though, and I really appreciate you guys prioritizing TBTL as one of those things. It really means a lot to us. So thanks. Wouldn't be here without you.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Top Story, Amazon accidentally sent out copies of Margaret Atwood's new book, which is the sequel to The Handmaid's Tale. It's called The Testaments. What I was really struck by, the book comes out September 10th officially at 12:01 a.m. It's kind of rare, it seems, outside of like the Potter universe, that there's this kind of anticipation around a book release. Like September 10th, 12:01 a.m. Mm-hmm. That's a very usually, you know, reserved for Apple products or something like that. That kind of excitement. It's actually nice to see. The thing I was struck by was the hoops that people had to jump through, bookstore owners had to jump through in terms of secrecy. This is an article by Heather Murphy in The New York Times, by the way. It talks about a guy named Josh Christie who owns a bookstore in Portland, Maine. It's not atypical for them to sign, if you're a bookstore owner or a bookstore employee, it's not atypical to sign some kind of sort of like non-disclosure type agreements. You're not going to blow the surprise or the secret on certain books, but this seemed extreme. He committed not only to keeping The Testaments, which is the name of the book, in a monitored and locked location. This is what he had to sign off on. But also to prohibiting any member of his staff to photograph the book or read a single passage before September 10th at 12:01 a.m. So apparently he was allowed to have the book or copies of the book. So at 12:01 a.m. he could put it out. But it had to be basically in a like locked vault and no one could take a picture of it or even look at it, even if you worked there.
And part of that is
But I have a quick question for you, and it's going to really betray my ignorance, but what the hell are you going to do at this point? Did you know this book was coming out for a long time, or was part of the secrecy that the book was a secret this whole time? Because I did not know that she was writing a follow-up.
I'm sure that our more literate listeners knew this. I had been seeing a lot more Margaret Atwood in the world the last, I don't know, 6 months. So I assumed she was working on something. Mm-hmm. Because she was doing interviews and just showing up in places. So I sensed a disturbance in the force, but I did not know it was specific to a follow-up to The Handmaid's Tale, which, of course, is a book that has taken on just like a weirdly documentarian quality in our current world with what's going on with particularly women's reproductive rights and other things. I mean, it's a book that was written a while ago and at the time seemed like a kind of a dystopian kind of nightmare, and now it's like did you watch the TV version of Handmaid's Tale?
I watched most of the first season. I don't know if it's interesting, but I'll tell you my relationship with the book is because that book is, you know, it's not new. I think it's, you know, it's from the mid-80s, I think. And Genevieve, I read most of my stuff based on suggestions from Genevieve, and because she just reads so much and knows what I like. And for the longest time, for as long as we've been together, I think she's suggested Margaret Atwood books, but for one reason or another, I never got into them until maybe a year before the TV show came out, and I had no idea it was going to become a TV show. I finally sat down and I read that book, and I think that was before the Trump administration, which really kind of is freaking everybody out and adding more and making everything just seem more relevant and pertinent. And so I read the book finally, and then I read it right as all this kind of fire around it started catching again with the TV show and our culture and whatnot. And so then when I finished it, I did get a chance to watch some of the show. And Genevieve really, you know, as much as she loves that book and loves Margaret Atwood, she just had zero interest and has zero interest in watching the show because she just feels like she's living in a dystopia. And just like turning on the TV and seeing more of it is not what she wants to do with her off time. So because she hasn't been watching it, I kind of didn't really get into it. And it is a tough thing to watch. You know, it's like we have a certain amount of time, and I understand wanting to watch something and connect with it. And it's been something that people have been, and especially women have been able to kind of rally around and connect with each other on, which is great. But for me personally, it just is so, it's so hard to live in that world.
Yeah. Carrie and I watched it, and she was initially resistant, but I did get her to start referring to herself as of Luke.
That's my wife.
And so that was, you know, I felt like kind of a win in our family. It's weird. It is very weird. I haven't read the book, but it's weird watching something like that that really does. And I don't think it's hysteria, really, although everything seems to come back to Def Leppard today. But it's just a simple fact. Love bites. I'm sorry, but what if the whole show, all I could, every topic had to emanate from a name of a Def Leppard song.
Is that the song that's mad about us? What did that girl say to you? Sorry, I always ask you.
Oh yeah, Mass True. Oh, that was Love Bites. True, that was right. That was very scary to me. It's the part where Elizabeth Moss's character forces the other women to pour some sugar on themselves so as to escape.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's surprising. And that's a weird crossover between Def Leppard and Handmaid's Tale. Now, it's weird to watch a show like that, honestly, and to feel like this is not super far off. And so I think that also kind of like, I enjoyed it as a, is enjoyed the right, I mean, can you enjoy that show? Are we allowed to enjoy it? Is that the point of it? Like, or is it a cautionary tale? Maybe both things can be true. But I would have liked it a lot more if Hillary Clinton was president. Because, like, then it would just be sort of like, I could just fully enjoy it as a, because I do actually like dystopian kind of, you know, stories and thing. I like, in a weird way, I sort of liked The Road by Cormac McCarthy, although I guess I was waiting for a happier ending.
Yeah.
I dig that kind of stuff. I don't know what that is like. I don't know what itch that's scratching in me that I like to kind of read or experience the idea of the world ending and it's really sucky. I don't, because I don't want that to happen. But yeah, to experience The Handmaid's Tale, at least the TV version, which is all I can speak to, has been complicated because of how much it seems to mirror some stuff going on really in this country. Anyway, all of which is to say, this book is hotly anticipated. Now, the problem with what happened, which is that Amazon.com actually sent out, they won't say how many, but some number of like advanced copies to people. The problem is these local bookstores are doing what they're supposed to do. They're signing these agreements. They're locking up copies of this book. I mean, it's hard enough being a local bookseller. And then you have Amazon just kind of like, you know, farting out copies of the book and being like, oh, RB, that's our bad. They basically said, Amazon said, due to a technical error, a small number of customers were inadvertently sent copies of Margaret Atwood's The Testaments. We apologize for this error. We value our relationship with authors, agents, and publishers and regret the difficulties this has caused to them and our fellow booksellers, which is kind of funny because one of these bookstore owners, I believe a woman named Rebecca George, she owns Volumes Book Cafe in Chicago. She objected to the term fellow bookseller. They are their own monopoly of chaos, she said in an interview. They think we are in the same class of retailer. To think we are in the same class of retailer really irks me. I mean, that was part of it, too. It's just like Amazon going like, oh, sorry, we sent out 100 copies of the book. It's like that might be the total number of copies that one of these local bookstores sells in the first week of this book that they've been locking away.
I love the term monopoly of chaos, by the way. Do you know, you just said 100, and I've been trying to figure this out. Is that what they're
guessing?
You're guessing. No, we don't really have any idea, like, what is a small number, right? Do we have any
idea? Yeah, we don't. I mean, and also a small number to Amazon might not be.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
The same as at a store. One of the people that's interviewed in this New York Times piece is a book reviewer who had basically tried to order the book, tried to get an advanced copy of the book, because that's kind of how it works when you're reviewing books. But then was told they're not doing the woman is named Beth Mowbray of Wilmington, North Carolina, writes book reviews for something called The Nerd Daily. She asked for the book early because she's going to review it. She was told, we're not sending out any review copies, and then got a weird alert from Amazon the other day saying, one of your items is ready sooner than anticipated, and then they sent her the book. And she was actually upset by that. She said, it's just hard for me to understand how that kind of mistake is made. Like, I think that she gets it that sending the book out early by Amazon is a real inadvertent FU to brick-and-mortar booksellers.
Yeah, to what... Not to start a conspiracy here, but to what degree do you believe this truly was just an accident as opposed to...
Oh, I totally believe it was.
It was just an accident. I just sort of feel... So, but I'm just trying to think, like, let's say this was some sort of a... I want to create an analogy here, and I just don't think I can. But I just think that Amazon as a corporation, if it was something that was important to them... to keep secret, if it was like critical to their success, if it had something to do with company secrets or something, this mistake wouldn't have been made. Now, why would you even have company secrets published? I just feel like, so you would say they weren't careful enough. They could have done more and they made a mistake, but they don't have to be careful because they're the big boys on the block.
Let me put it this way. I've done various projects for Amazon where I'd done like voiceover work and stuff like that. The non-disclosure agreements that I had to sign, which I'm possibly violating right now, who knows, are intense. Literally, I probably talked about this back when I was doing it because I am Luke Burbank, first of my name, non-recognizer of non-disclosure agreements. but they literally were calling it Project Hot Dog. When I showed up, and I'm telling you, it was not about hot dogs. When I showed up to do the recordings at the audio studio in Seattle, there were signs that said Project Hot Dog. That's how serious they are about secrecy when they feel it is important to them. So this is – I mean, you're also talking about when they say a problem with the retailer, this could have been – I don't understand how the business model works, but one of the things I know about Amazon is that when you go on Amazon.com, you're not just interacting solely with that company. You're interacting often with all kinds of vendors and third parties and people who are selling, you know, stuff under the Amazon banner, but they don't they're like I said, third party sellers. Who knows what sort of glitch in the matrix of that place blurped out these copies of the book. But I can tell you that if it was seen as high priority number one, they probably it wouldn't have happened.
Can you imagine how upset I would be if I signed on for something called Project Hot Dog only to find out it wasn't indeed about hot dogs? That I would be upset about that. I would tear up.
That's why I didn't even let you, I didn't even let you audition for it, because I knew how hard it was going to be for you if you thought you booked something called Project Hot Dog.
But you know, I think I've read a lot of stories before about Amazon and the relationship between Amazon and local booksellers, and you know, I've paid attention to a certain degree, but mostly, I don't know. I don't know if I defended Amazon or just didn't get into the fray too much emotionally and mentally. But this story, as written in the New York Times, has really tipped the scales for me. Like, I already have some guilt feelings. I don't know if this is where you wanted to take the conversation. Probably not. And also, I don't want to get you in trouble with other potential work from Amazon. But I'm starting to develop some real guilt feelings.
Do you think me violating the non-disclosure agreement is helping me?
Yeah, that's true. That's on you. But like the other day, like I've got a bad cable in my studio. Not to get super personal here, but I hear it happens to all kinds of podcasters. Like, I just think that if we get rid of the stigma about it, like, fine. So now everybody knows I have a cable. It's an extender. It's a quarter-inch extender for headphones and for the guest headphones. And as you know, Luke, as somebody who uses those headphones, sometimes it just doesn't perform, and you have to jiggle it around to make it work. And so I wanted to replace that thing. And there's a Guitar Center across the street from me. Now, there's a good chance they have it. And something else I wanted to buy, which is a quarter-inch male-to-female splitter. Now I'm getting really personal. Mm-hmm. And I could have... I've been meaning to replace these two things for a while now. And then on, I think it was last Saturday, I was cleaning up. I just wanted to throw the old ones away. And I finally said, you know what? I'm just going to buy these off of Amazon right now. I could have gone across the street to Guitar Center and at least seen if they have them there. I mean, literally across the street from me, right? Like a block away. And so I guess that's not literal. But instead, it was just so much easier to sit behind my computer, get the free shipping because we're Prime members, and just have it shipped from God knows where. And I know that that is not good for the environment, with the packaging, with the delivery, all like it is against a lot of my values to do that. But it was just so simple, and it just makes me kind of feel bad. Like, I should drive down to Renton to the. It's a heck of a trip, but it's also a heck of a store. The Fry's down there is amazing. It's like it's like an Andy Wonderland down there. Don't think too hard about that. And I'm not doing that because it's just easier to go to Amazon, and I'm starting to feel less and less like, oh, well, hey, you don't punish a company for being successful. Like, okay, they're successful, but, you know, I now know, thanks to Chris Hayes' podcast and other things, like, there are all kinds of reasons that we shouldn't be shopping at Amazon, all kinds of business practices and things going on locally in the community here, and them putting their thumb down on the city council. Like, I'm really kind of starting to turn anti-Amazon. And then this story, really, like, hearing these tales of these booksellers, like, if you're a local bookstore operator, you have so much going against you anyway. These moments where much of culture is excited about a new book coming out, and there might be actual lines outside your store waiting for it. And then for Amazon to be like, oops, sorry, we just squeaked a bunch of these things out. And apparently Amazon is selling at a price that, like, these booksellers, they said something like, if we sold it as low as Amazon is, we'd be making like $1.50 or $1.70 a book or something like that. Yeah. But Amazon can just use these things as loss leaders and totally just, you know, dominate the market. I'm rambling, but I don't know, man. I don't feel great about this.
Yeah, I guess part of it, and this is a slippery slope. So, or I should say that I'm sure that people could pick apart my logic on this. Part of it is I feel like if I'm going to buy a book, I should go to like Village Books here in Fairhaven, or go down to, there's even a used bookstore that's pretty great down in town. But like, if I'm going to buy a book, I try to go buy it at a physical bookstore if I can. I know we did ads for Libro, which actually would direct your money to physical bookstores, which is cool. But then if I'm buying toilet paper, that's actually a bad example because I don't buy toilet paper from Amazon. But I would feel less bad buying toilet paper from Amazon because in my mind, it's like I'm not putting a mom and pop toilet paper shop.
Mm-hmm.
Although that would be – that's a pretty good rhyme. I don't know. I have half of a poem right there. But you know what I mean? Like in my mind, it's like certain things are – like stuff that you need to go try to buy from a physical purveyor of those things. But I don't know why. To me, it's like a local bookshop is sacred and something that is to be treasured. But somebody who's selling something else that just seems more kind of like, I don't know, less romantic to me. It's like, yeah, I'll just get that from Amazon.
Yeah.
But that is sort of informally how my decision-making works around that.
Yeah, and I wasn't kidding when I talk about Fry's. I don't know if people have been to Fry's. There were a couple closer to where I lived in L.A. The only one I know of around here, like I say, I think it's in Renton, and last time I went there was before a live thing that we had to do, and I just needed some equipment that I couldn't get in my neighborhood, and it did take me a long time to get there. In the middle of a weekday, it took me at least 45 minutes to get down there. But then once you're down there, it really is. It's the type of store that, I mean, it's a massive store. I mean, comparing Fry's to an independent bookseller is probably insulting
right.
independent booksellers, but it's still an experience that is becoming less and less common to be able to walk into a huge electronics store like that where you can get anything from a TV to a very, very specific cable that converts. Like, what was I getting? I got some nasty-ass cables there that I will probably never use, but just because I loved the idea that they existed.
Why would you buy nasty-ass cables?
Yeah, they weren't I mean that in like a nasty, like in a good way. I'm trying to think. I had something that converted, RCA to VGA, and it split them all out, which I know doesn't even make sense, but it was like a cool thing. I will
man,
never.
It is nasty out there.
I will never use it in my life. I was like, but maybe I might find myself in some sort of a meatball surgery situation that I need this thing. And it was like $1.50 or something because it was just a weird thing.
Yeah. Now, let me say this, and I don't. This is going to sound like I'm, being overly negative or being a sort of, mansplaining to you or something. We've talked about this before. Is it mansplaining if it's man to man, is it still mansplaining?
I feel like I've definitely been mansplained to before, but often in a room when I was, whatever, go ahead.
So, the thing that's funny is Fry's itself, I'm sure at some point displaced.
Sure.
Because Fry's were huge.
Yeah.
It was a national chain. Now it's falling on hard times itself. But it's like there was a point where Fry's swept through and probably put, mom and pop TV sellers out of business or something. I mean, this is to some degree, this is just the way of commerce in this country. But the reason that I think of bookstores, I guess, as having a special classification is because and this is maybe just old man tries to read what's written on cloud. But there is just something. Public libraries are something that I spent a lot of time in as a kid because they were free. And in the summertime, we just were looking for something to do. And bookstores also have some kind of quality about them. And there's something that to me that is very valuable about being around a bunch of information and being with other people who are being around a bunch of information. There's, I feel like some kind of connection that gets made when you, like I said, we've got a great bookstore, Village Books here in Bellingham, which seems to be thriving too, by the way. But I guess, I think every once in a while there's you got Third Place Books in Seattle. You got, of course, Powell's in Portland. There's you get to have – it's like podcasts. There's 8 million bookstores and there's 7 of them are making money or 7 of them are actually financially solvent. And but anyway, all of which is to say there's just something really – I find really life-affirming about going into Village Books and walking around. And the idea that that place is going to die, I'd rather go if I were to buy this Margaret Atwood book. And this also has something to do with privilege that I guess I could pay $27 for that book if I wanted it instead of $17 on Amazon. I hope that we can figure out a way to try to preserve those spaces because I think they're really important.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I say, I acknowledge that comparing Fry's to an independent bookseller is not fair to the independent booksellers. I would say that the reason I mention that is just because it is an experience, though, that is going away. And if I enjoy that experience, why would I be actively working to make them even more rare by using Amazon as opposed to going to these stores that I love. Also, I'm starting to get a weird feeling about Fry's because I just went to their website. One of their featured hot products is a pair of spy sunglasses, and they also have a pair of just transparent spy glasses that apparently you're supposed to wear these things, and it can spy sunglasses with video recording, photographic, and webcam built into them. Well, you're supposed to wear these around? What good comes of this? My friends.
So what are they? So what they're trying? Are they trying to basically repurpose Google Glass? I'm trying to look it up on my own because when I was a kid, dude, the back of the comic book would have X-ray glasses, which were of course BS. It was just It was basically a 3D glasses, but that didn't even work. But it just it made everything look doubled. So you'd look at your hand. Did you ever get your hands on or
never
ever
did?
Have those
always
X-ray
wondered.
Glasses?
Always wondered what they actually did when you put them on. It just kind of gave you double vision.
Yes, that was all it did. But of course, I wanted them because I was like, I am going to, and this, you know, this is, remember, 10-year-old Luke or something. But I was just like, I can see through clothes. Yes, mm-hmm. Let us sign up for that. I never got those glasses, and of course, they didn't work, thankfully. But it's weird because I feel like, based on your description, Fry's is just leaning into. If they start selling sea monkeys, they've officially nailed all of the stuff I was obsessed with having as a 10-year-old kid.
You know, it's funny. I know Google Glass was not something that was successful. It was kind of a rare misstep for them. But I didn't. I guess you're right. This is essentially maybe sort of the same functionality, maybe even less so. But I don't like the fact that these are for adults, apparently, but are called spy sunglasses. Like, okay, you're a little kid. You see something in the back of a comic book that says, oh, you can see through. And also, you thought you could see through clothes, but the advertisement was at least like you can see through your hand. I can picture in the back of Archie Comics illustration
that you're looking at a hand that's all like vibrating or whatever.
And even if as little kids or little horn dogs or whatever, you're kind of like, ooh, you're titillated by that idea.
I also did an Amazon project called Little Horn Dogs.
That one was actually not a fake name either. That was just real.
That was a real thing.
The fact that this seems to be marketed towards adults, and it isn't called like Google Glass or Fry Glass. It's just called Spy Sunglasses for Video Recording and Photographs and Webcam. Like, it seems to me like I don't know. Can we at least pretend that we're not, that you're not being a total creeper, that you're not trying to sell this to probably awful people?
Well, here's the thing. I can't believe we're going to debate this now, but I guess we are. One, the style of the glasses is horrendous. Beyond the privacy concerns, it's like, tell them the bone sent you.
Yeah,
it is like 100% some Jay Buhner looking gargoyle Trucktober business.
Definitely a Go Hawks look. Let's put it that way.
The other thing is that the question, though, is like, is there a reasonable expectation of privacy? If I can see you on the street, like if I'm walking down the street with these glasses on, and if you're just standing somewhere and I'm videotaping you, I agree. I think it's creepy. But there's also just the question of like, I don't know, if it's somewhere where someone could just see anyway, is that – I mean, you know what? I'm going to answer my own question. It's still weird.
Yeah, I'm not worried about me. I'm just worried about, you know, usually it's women who are victims of just, you hear those stories every now and then.
But what I'm saying is like, if you were to walk up to a person, I mean, I guess it's just the idea of videotaping or photographing someone without their permission, even if there's like, even if legally they don't have the sort of what's called reasonable expectation of privacy, it's just like not nice.
Yeah.
It's like, you know. Okay.
It makes me feel bad.
Well, I'm glad we've solved that.
Okay.
And
I just don't understand why Margaret Atwood is buying these glasses. I mean,
for an interview and she had those glasses. She's like, I got to keep track of who is leaking my book. And the only way to do it is I had to go deep cover.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right, let's you know what? Let's as we say ironically, but maybe not that ironically. Let's put a pin in the whole Marvin Gaye ISO vocals thing.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe if we have time on Monday, we can jump into that.
Yeah,
because
that
it's actually fun. But I do want to play this David Lee Roth thing at some point, but it's going to take a minute. So I figured, why don't we, speaking of music, though, why don't we get into our little music for your weekend thing here at the end of the program, as is our tradition on Friday. And as is our tradition, Andrew, should we start with you? Do you have a song picked out, or do you need me to go to buy you some time?
No, this is good. This is a album that was given to me in cassette tape form by listener Michael at the Thing Festival. I got to say a quick hello to him.
Yeah. Okay, listener
show.
Michael, let me just mention, he is the large man, right? He's the guy who was almost in a altercation in a bathroom with a guy who did not wash his hands or whatever. And then he...
I am a large man. I'm a very large man, and I use my dad voice a lot.
Yeah, he had to use his dad voice on this guy, and then it was a whole thing. Security had to come pull the guy off of him, basically, out in the store.
You know,
same guy, right?
You know what? I don't know for sure that I made that connection, although I think you're right. We have a couple of listeners. I hope this isn't insulting. We have a couple of different listeners named Michael who are both very active
really?
In emailing us
back and
forth.
What are the chances?
Yeah, I know. And so sometimes I get my Michaels
confused.
The most
common American male name. We have multiples of that.
Right, yeah. But anyway, I think you're right. I think that is the same Michael, and he was really sweet. He actually gave us a big bag of goodies. He made special T-shirts for the Thing Festival.
Yeah.
He gave us some homemade canned pickles and relish, Johnny and Bobo branded that I'll be bringing to the picnic tomorrow. Woodland Park, Woodland Park Shelter Number 5, 3 p.m.
But not far from the zoo.
Not far from the zoo at all. You can go to the zoo before or after. And by the way, somebody also, I think I saw somebody posted on Slack, like, hey, is anybody going to hang out afterwards? By the way, once we're done with this, I don't know what your plans are, Luke, but I'm happy to hang out afterwards. Not that... Nobody asked me if they wanted to hang out afterwards, but assuming
right.
that if anything is going on afterwards, I'm saying please invite me.
Are you wearing your spy glasses for it?
I'm gonna be wearing my Rainier.
Are you wearing your Margaret Atwood branded spy glasses?
Which Rainier spy glasses are you gonna wear, Luke? Because I just want to.
I'll bring
sure.
five. Fine, Andrew. I'll bring five options.
What if we show up and everybody's wearing spy glasses?
Will it's you like please go to Fry's and get two pair?
I know that.
We're just there grilling in spyglasses in our Rainier's hats like, hey, who's ready to party?
I feel like I keep bringing it up, that video from like 5 years ago of those Scientologists wearing the cameras on their heads while they were harassing ex-members. We just show up and like everybody's just kind of like trying to like get in our face with their spyglasses on. Okay, back to listener Michael, who may or may not be a large man. He gave us a big bag of goodies, and one of the things he gave us was a cassette tape by this band. It's a Seattle band, moved to L.A. kind of recently, but I know them as a Seattle band called La Luz. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. La Luz. And I was even thinking, have you had them on Livewire or anything?
Yeah, I had a story with them.
Oh, really?
I probably talked about it on this show. I'm a fan of their work. I had them on, and I mentioned in the intro something about them being an all-female band because mm-hmm. that was something that was very often mentioned about them in reviews and write-ups of their work. And because it's not typical, this was my thinking going in. And I said something to the effect of, you know, like an all-female kind of, you know, surf punk band with, you know, with other influences or whatever. And like literally on stage, they were like, why do you have to mention that we're all female?
Oh.
It's like... Okay, well, good point. So we actually did a do-over on the intro, and so I know La Luz, and I am a fan, and if I am ever introducing them, I will not introduce them that way because I learned my lesson.
Did you interview them? Like, how did that kind of like just ruin the rest of the conversation?
No, it didn't actually. Oddly enough, I mean, yeah, you know what? I mean, they're entitled to be introduced and described in a way that they feel comfortable with, and so. I mean, I think I could sit down and try to construct an argument as to why that's maybe relevant. But that's one of those things where it's like, do I want to be the guy arguing super hard that I'm allowed to introduce a band in a way the band isn't like into? Or should I just be like, okay, you know? So I think we chatted a little bit more and I think it – and they actually – then they came up for a second song and we had a very nice chat. I mean, I think it was – you know, I think it worked itself out okay.
Well, my guess is you definitely know more about them than I do. And my guess is a lot of people in our audience know more about them than I do as well, because I've always seen the name around, but I don't think I've ever heard their music, unless maybe you've played it on the show before. But thanks to listener Michael for giving me this cassette tape. He said, I think this will be up your alley. And it really is. And it's
so good, right?
It's working for me right now. This is an album that came out last year, actually in the spring of last year, but it really is connecting with me as a kind of end of summer sound, because it's this, it's, you know, got these surf roots, but it's also very languid, and if that's the right word, and it just kind of, it's not like upbeat summer poppy. It's kind of like, all right, I think the summer's kind of winding down now, or at least that's how I'm interpreting it because of when I'm listening to it. This song is one of the more, I would say, upbeat tracks on the record. I'm really loving it, but I'm also very new to it. I'm going to be listening to this all weekend. This song is called We're an All-Woman Band, and We Want You to Know It. No, just joking. This song is called Lonely Dozer. Actually, I was listening to this today and thinking about our conversation about naps earlier this week. Surprised to hear that this music appeals to me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny though, because this might be the overlap of, because I know you've been having a strong kind of 90s kind of musical vibe, right? And is this scratching a little bit of your, like, you know, what would it be, Belly, or what's the other iteration of that band?
The Belly,
throwing muses,
there's some Pixies DNA,
like,
in there.
It feels like a little bit of that, but also I'm very into kind of like surfy, like this has a little bit of like the band Lush in it for me, and kind of dreamy, dream poppy stuff that I like. I wonder if this is like a nice overlap, or an overlap of the stuff you tend to go for and the stuff I tend to go for.
Yeah, although I would say that, like, kind of, if you're talking about that kind of era of music, the Pixies also have that kind of surfy quality too.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it too. I wasn't thinking about this through a 90s lens, actually, but definitely a surfy lens. It reminds me, you told me that, what was that surf duo from the 60s that we played last week? And you said that you went through a little phase of listening to a lot
Santo
of their...
Santo and Johnny.
Yeah, and I listened to them. It was perfect. I was out on my porch reading a book the other day, so I didn't want something that was going to be too distracting. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Yeah. I've found that that's happening to me a lot now. My brain used to be able to listen to music with lyrics in it and read, and I can't do it anymore. One of the two things suffers for it. So mm-hmm. I've really gone to this, like, so like this morning I was doing some last minute work on the Livewire script for tonight, and it was like I had to have on my old Oscar Peterson Trio mm-hmm. Pandora station, just so it was like non words.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as that was done, and then I was just kind of puttering around the house, then I put on this album, which is what my Music for Your Weekend song comes from. The album is called Like a River Loves the Sea, and it is a song called Coming Down for You by a singer named Joan Shelley. Now, 16 hours ago, I didn't know that there was a singer named Joan Shelley in the world, but there was one of the most rapturous reviews of an album I've ever heard on NPR yesterday. I think it was Tom Moon reviewing this album on All Things Considered, and it was like, it really worked because I heard the music, you know, in the review, and then I went home and then I looked it up and then I was like, wow, this is Andrew. Like, I've been getting kind of getting prepped for this a little bit because there's a sort of, I feel like there's a resurgence of a certain kind of female singing. Like, there's a singer named Wiseblood who has this amazing album out that Addie turned me on to. There's also Kate LeBon. Oh, by the way, Addie's interview with Kate LeBon is in She Shreds magazine. It's down by the seashore is where you can pick it up.
Seashells there.
All like, just, you know, paternal pride aside, it's really good. The article is really good. I'm reading it. I'm like, my offspring wrote this. That's amazing. Now, if she ever interviews the band The Offspring, that'll be weird because my offspring will be interviewing The Offspring. But anyway, Kate LeBon, Wiseblood, there's this kind of, I don't know what it is, how to describe it. I'm bad with words. But basically, there's a style of music that's been emerging that I've been hearing that I've really been enjoying. There's also a thread of it that is very, I want to say, like Joni Mitchell. There's a kind of Joni Mitchell vibe to a lot of music. And it's also, you know, it is, Andrew, it's Vashti Bunyan style, the person who does the theme song to the show Patriot that we love so much for season one. So this music is very, this Joan Shelley music, it's very mellow. Like I said, it really harkens back to a very folky 70s sound. But I listened to this whole album this morning and it blew me away. It also feels like, you were talking about end of summer music, this actually feels like fall music to me. So I'm getting this a little early, but I can see some rainy fall weekends where I'm just kind of puttering around and this music is playing for me. So anyway, yeah, I wanted to suggest this Joan Shelley Coming Down for You. Do you have it there? Are you able to play it?
I got it right here.
Cool. All right, take a listen.
I'm coming down for you to where you fall into. I'm coming down for you as you always knew I would. No one taught you to pull in close when danger was near. All your tender parts exposed out there in the clear. As you always do, I'm saving a part of me just to come down for you.
I will mention, this is 100% the most rocking song on the album. This is the stadium rock song off of it. I mean, it's very spare. It's very quiet. Her voice is incredibly beautiful. If you're into this kind of thing, if you're into this vibe of music, I cannot recommend it highly enough. Like a River Loves the Sea, it is incredible.
I like the production. I wonder who produced this, as a matter of fact. I'm trying to look. It reminds me, it sounds old, that banjo, the way it's recorded, it sounds kind of old time. I guess banjos always kind of sound old timey, but there's something about the quality of this that I could have believed was from like the 60s or something.
Totally.
Reminds me a little bit,
like,
too. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if you gave me this on a cassette tape, this whole album, and you were like, oh, hey, I found this old, like, unreleased Judy Collins from the 70s, I'd be like, yeah, checks out.
Right,
like,
it
sounds like from another era, but it's also great too because it's like and now I'm just sort of like regurgitating what Tom Moon said in the review yesterday, but it's like, it's songs that are about like the environment and about relationships and about all this stuff that's kind of heavy, but it's just done in this really artful way that, like, it has me thinking about issues on this planet. In the way that if you think about, like, Big Yellow Taxi, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about one of the most, and I don't mean the Counting Crows version, although that is also a club banger, but if you want to think about, like, I'm not saying it saved us because we're probably going to die from global warming, but The idea of you paved paradise, you put up a parking lot, like that's got to be in the top five most quotable environmental messages, mm-hmm. like that have ever been created,
mm-hmm.
By Joni Mitchell. And like, I don't know, there's something to that, I guess. And like this album has, I've only listened to it in its completion or to its completion one time, but it's like there's just stuff in there where it has me thinking about how we are in the world in a way that I know is going to kind of stick with me. So, like I said, if you're down for some thoughtful. She also, I've started following her on Twitter, Joan Shelley, and I'll just say this real quick and then we'll do the listener suggestion. It was so funny because she's been doing all these interviews around this album, and I'm just paraphrasing the tweet here. I'm going to totally mess it up, but she said something to the effect of, because she was like interviewed in Rolling Stone, and a lot of people have been writing about her. I think you're going to hear more about her. This is kind of a hot record. But she said something like, for everyone who is so super bored of hearing me talk about my process of making all this and whatever, just know there is also some music that actually got recorded and made this album. And I was like, this explains why so often when I'm trying to interview singers like on Livewire, they're kind of like, I don't know if I want to talk about the like process of making the music. I just want to play the music now. Like I could, it made me understand how it can be exhausting as a musician to spend a lot of time talking about the music and less time just making or playing the music.
Yeah, especially as somebody who's often trying to to get musicians to talk about their music. I know as a former talk show producer that, you know, that was always a frustration. We'd have musicians in. We love doing like kind of like just very kind of like lo-fi live recordings with them, just like, hey, just bring an acoustic guitar, and they'd often be happy to do that. But then to talk about the music sometimes would be a real struggle, right? And what's the famous quote, like talking about music is like dancing to architecture or something. I'm brutalizing that. You know, some musicians just don't want to talk.
But you know what? Brutalism isn't a form of architecture.
That is true.
That's, like, at least you're keeping it consistent.
Can I tell you about a tweet that I saw from Megan Amram the other day that for some reason
yes,
you're talking
you
about?
Who I also follow on Twitter.
You're talking about like the kind of environmental slogans or something that you could see on the back of a paved paradise. And I just thought she tweeted the other day, I'm starting to think my coexist bumper sticker isn't working. For some reason, I've been thinking about it. And now every time I see a car with a bunch of those types of bumper stickers, I'm like, huh, I wonder if that coexist bumper sticker is working.
There's something darkly comic about the idea that just like as life as we know it expires on this planet, somewhere there's just like a rusted out Volvo with a coexist bumper sticker.
Right,
that's
right.
Just the last shot in the movie that is human life on this planet.
Yeah, wow.
So anyway, ending on a positive note, we'll see you all at the picnic tomorrow. It may be our last, so you probably ought to show up, plus free burgers and dogs on APM. Again, 3:00 at the picnic shelter number 5 at Woodland Park. Also, tonight, in a few hours, Livewire, Neptune, if you're looking for something to do, get at us. Let's get to our listener suggestion for the week for Music for Your Weekend. It's from listener Gregory. Gregory says, my humble nomination for Music for Your Weekend is Black Moon Rising by the Black Pumas. The song evokes 1970s soul. It's a slow groove, perfect for a late summer weekend of subdued excitement. Although I do not formally recognize that, by the way. This is me talking now, not Gregory. I do not formally recognize that as the nickname of the city, but I get where you're coming from, Gregory, and I think this is actually a very cool song. Signed, Power Out, Gregory in Pomona, California. So that's going to do it. We're going to hear Black Moon Rising by the Black Pumas. That will end our broadcast week. Thank you so much for listening to our show. Thanks for supporting it financially. Thanks for telling your friends about it. And thanks for being part of this whole thing. 2,983 episodes in. We'll be back here on Monday with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, enjoy your weekend. Maybe we'll see you tomorrow. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
I want you to be my woman, babe. Every time you get dressed in black, you give a grown man a heart attack. I pray that good Lord will bring you back. You're my sunshine.
power out,